Welcome to the Intentional Encourager podcast, where each episode brings you compelling conversations and stories designed to entertain, enlighten, and encourage. And now here's your host, Brian Sexton.
And welcome into the Intentional Encourager podcast. I'm your host, Brian Sexton. Thank you for joining us again today. I have someone on this podcast I have looked forward to having for a good while. She uses the impact of community to help educate, empower, inspire revenue leaders to level up, and she's an advocate for women in sales. I love that. That is so cool. You can find her on LinkedIn at Galem, G-A-L-E-M, Girmay, G-I-R-M-A-Y, but you can find her right here, right now on the Intentional Encourager podcast. Galem, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Brian?
I am well. I am well. We have been working on this, full disclosure, we've been working on this for a good while. Yes. And I always love it when it seems that the best conversations that I have with people are the ones that take a while to get to happen. And I'm so excited for this conversation. Let's start here. You have had, in the last several months, you have had a transformative move in your life. Mm-hmm. You made the move to London, England. Take me through that. That is something pretty ambitious to do in the midst of a global pandemic. Oh my goodness. And so take me through the impetus of you moving to London and how that all came about and transpired.
Yeah, so I actually moved to London 2 years ago. So it's not in
well, forgive me. I already first question out of the chute and I've already fouled it up. But forgive me.
No, but here's where I think you got it from, because I have shared that I was moving, right, from one place to another. And I think it's great that you asked that question so I can clarify on this, right? And this is part of me taking ownership in terms of how I communicate and then understanding that the way I decide to communicate is not always the way that the recipient will receive it, right? So it might have been confusing, not just to you, but to other people. So to clarify it is that I moved recently from one flat, like one apartment here in London, to another one in London. So that's the recent move. And I've actually moved twice during the pandemic. Once was in March of 2020, I moved in to a new place in London, just literally the weekend of lockdown, our first lockdown in London. That's when I moved into my new place. And then now a year later, again, March 2021, I moved into my second place. So that's like where you're getting the whole move from. But I moved from the US to London 2 years ago. And before I moved to the US, I came from Sweden. So I moved quite a lot over the past 10, 11 years, coming, you know, born and raised in Sweden, moving to the US, stay there for 9 years, and then from US, Boston, to London, England. And here I am.
Let me ask you this, because a lot of people, where I live in this part of the United States, I live in West Virginia. I've lived in this region probably for the last, well, I remember when I moved back here, it was 1980. I was a kid. So I've lived in this region most all of my life.
Yeah.
You were born and raised in Sweden, and we'll get to that part of your story.
Yes.
Moved to the United States and then moving to London.
Yeah.
What is it about moving to different parts of the world that excited you and inspired you?
Oh, that's such a big question, Brian, because there's so much to my answer with this question. I think one part of it is me just seeking excitement and seeking to explore new places, me being curious about different people from different places. And the first time I moved from Sweden to US, I was fairly young. You know, I was turning 21 that year that I moved there. And like, I was young, I didn't know what I would expect. I didn't have an idea of what culture shock really meant for me and the changes that I was gonna have to get used to, starting with just the simple fact, like, okay, now I have to speak English every day. That's not something I grew up doing. English is not my first language.
And you do it so well. Your English is impeccable. Your English is better than mine.
No, yes. Definitely not. You haven't heard me enough. Maybe you'll feel and think differently at the end of this conversation. You'll have some pointers to give, but really, that was number one challenge when I moved. I was like, oh my God, the first 2 weeks, I just felt like, do I really have to speak English again today? And I had to, like, that's how I felt.
And now I how I feel some days. Do I have to speak English today?
Yes,
you know, can't, like, I just say what I want to say?
Yes, in my own language, in my own way. But yeah, I had to, you know, when I moved to the US, it was for the purpose of exploring a new culture. It was me just wanting to get away from where I had been my entire life. I just had this desire for years before I moved of like, I need to see new places. I'm tired of seeing the old same streets. I'm tired of I lived in this really small town south of Sweden. And that's, you know, where I was born and raised. And I was tired of it. I was like, enough, like, this is not fun. I don't feel like I knew at a young age that this wasn't the right place for me. I knew I was never going to evolve into what I wanted to do and who I wanted to become. So I knew that instantly, like from just my experiences, that that wasn't going to happen in that environment for me. So I was seeking that new life, the excitement of meeting new people and doing different things. And the culture, the American culture, and all the fun stuff that, you know, I saw on TV growing up, basically. So that's a part of, you know, going back to your question of how did you make all these moves and, you know, move into two different countries and lived in three different countries. It's that excitement of just, you don't know who you're going to meet or where you're going to learn and what you're going to expand into. And all of that has happened, just the expansion.
What is it like making an international move? Because we here in the States, we see like International House Hunters on HGTV and people are like, oh, they're moving from Charlotte, North Carolina to Lisbon, Portugal. You know, and it's like, okay, well, that's awesome. I wouldn't want to move because my wife and I and our son have lived here 16 years, almost 16 years. There's a lot of stuff we've accumulated and things like that.
Yep.
Take me through making an international move when you move to the United States from London, you know, because I'm sure you accumulated things in the US and how does an international move work, Galen?
Excellent question, Brian, because I think there's two parts to this, and this is where it's not that straightforward one sentence type of answer to your question, because I look at any move that I've made from an emotional perspective. What does it take for me to emotionally be ready for this journey ahead? And what does it physically take for me? These are all the stuff that you're talking about that you accumulated over years. So let me backtrack a little bit. Right. When I made the move from Sweden to the US, I arrived with the intention of only staying for a year. That was the program. That was the au pair program that I was in, was to be there for a year. You could potentially expand it into 2 years. But I arrived with one suitcase and one backpack. Right. That was what I came with. So I left a bunch of stuff back home where I grew up with my foster family. I left stuff in my room there. I came to United States with one suitcase and one backpack. That was what I had. So that's how that started, right? And then over the years, over the next 9 years of my life, obviously I accumulated a lot of stuff, from furniture to clothes to memories to all these different things that you buy over 9 years of your life. So that's the physical portion of moving. You have to consider what are the things worth keeping when you make a move, because you can't keep every single item. And what are the emotional things that I'm bringing with me and also leaving behind potentially, right? because when I, this is the part I think where people have a challenge when they're making a move, is that they're leaving people behind them. They're leaving family members, they're leaving loved ones, they're not going to see them every day. This is what I think when you have those roots that makes people not want to embark on that journey, because they have roots somewhere. They have loved ones, they have family, and they cannot imagine a life living without them. And as much as I would like to understand that fully, I don't completely understand it, because that's not part of my story or my background. So it was easier for me to make the move from Sweden to US, from US to London.
And, you know, again, I love what you talked about. And what I wrote down was the emotional journey involved. Because again, you're in a place for a while. You think to yourself when you initially made the move to the United States, and we'll unpack more of that in a little bit. But here's why I want to go there. What I wrote down was the emotional journey. So let's fast forward to the last year living in London, because again, everyone has a different view of how the pandemic has affected them.
Yeah.
Physically, mentally, emotionally, all those other things. Take me through the emotional journey and the journey for the last year with you. How have things been in London around the pandemic?
It's been such a mix. And I'm going to share two parts of this, because I was able to travel over the holidays. I went back home to Sweden, and that was a completely different environment than it's been in London for the past year. So in London, it's been up and down. There's been quite a few lockdowns, and we're currently in one, about to exit the first portion of this latest lockdown that we're in. They're lifting a few restrictions here, but it's been confusing to me. There hasn't been a lot of clarity around expectations, what you should or should not be doing. And naturally, because I've been so busy over the past year, I haven't had that much time or made that much time to spend doing things outside of work or the things that I'm passionate about. I spend a lot of time indoors, and I actually am the type of person who have to schedule time to be intentional about doing other things, right? To live a more holistic life and focusing more of self-care, which includes like going out for a walk for 30 minutes every day, you know, doing things like that. So the times where I have been outside or to exercise, like I love going out for a run in the morning. Those are the times where I get to observe what's happening around me, how people are behaving, you know, are people wearing masks or not? Like that was a very confusing in the beginning, because I would be outside and not a lot of people would wear masks. And I was like, what is going on here? You know, and then you go into a grocery store and it's kind of same thing there. And then after lockdown one, there's a break. This was around like July 4th weekend, I remember, because that's when they completely lifted and said, everyone can go out. You can go to restaurants, you can go to bars. And coming out of that one, then people started to see, well, now COVID cases are going up again. There's a lot more cases happening. So now they went back to saying, you have to wear a mask when you go into places. And you're just like, well, I was already doing it, but it gets really confusing because you don't know what to do around other people, right? Yeah. So I started to avoid going outside more than anything, because I just was afraid.
Wow. I love that perspective, because again, you know, you think about how things are across the pond. We think about here in the United States. And again, I do think there's a lot of confusion, and you know, that seems to be a global thing, is the confusion that's happening. And so I love that perspective. Let's step aside, take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about women in sales. Something that for you ladies out there and in leadership, you're going to want to stick around with this conversation. My good friend Galen Germay is with me here on the Intentional Encourager podcast. Back in a moment.
Hey everybody, Brian Sexton here. I want to tell you about our sponsor, SEO National. SEO stands for Search Engine Optimization. Now, what's that, you might say? Well, search engine optimization helps you show up higher on search engines in front of paying customers for words that you as a business owner can monetize. What a great concept. SEO National is owned by my good buddy Damon Burton, who's been a guest here on the Intentional Encourager podcast. Not only has Damon and his team worked with businesses of all sizes, from e-commerce startups to NBA teams and Shark Tank featured businesses, but more importantly, Damon and his team are about transparency, trust, and providing lifetime value. So much so that he still has his first customers after opening SEO National 14 years ago. Let me give you some intentional encouragement and call Damon and his team today at 855-736-6285 or go to www.seonational.com and get a free quote.
You have been so actively involved in sales for women. And I love it. You and I have a ton of mutual friends in the selling world. And I just love your perspective. I know you mentioned you came to the United States as an au pair. I'm gonna save that because I know there's a good story there behind that.
Yes.
Let me ask you this, Gail. What do you see now in sales that is impacting women more than anything? Is there one thing? Is there several things? Because that's the space that you speak into. So what do you see the impact of COVID? Let's extrapolate a little more conversation from what we were just talking about. How do you think that the pandemic has affected women, especially in sales?
I believe from my experience and my conversations with other women in sales, other women in business, is that more women have started to come together. And I can't end it with saying more than ever before, because what am I really comparing it to, right? I haven't been as involved in building communities and building relationships as I have been for the past year and a little bit more than that, right? So for me, what I've noticed in this past year as I get involved is that there's this whole group of people, whole group of women from all around the world who just wants to really help each other. And that's empowering and that's motivating and that's extremely inspiring that you can have so many women all around the world deciding, actively deciding and being so intentional about each other's growth, about each other's success, and helping each other out and motivating each other and supporting each other and building true connections and friendships. That's what I've seen happening. And I love that I get to be part of those groups. I love that I get to have women come to me and I get to come to other women and we get to help each other and grow with each other and see the journey and the progress of our lives. That's what I love about it.
I love that. And here's what I love about, and I was just scrolling through your profile a few minutes ago on LinkedIn. This is what caught my eye. I'm one message away from doing my best to help you in your journey. That speaks to me because it speaks not only to the power of connection, but it also speaks to the power of really trying to encourage, to lift, to lend a hand, all of those basic intrinsic human principles that are in play no matter if you're in London, England, or you're in Barboursville, West Virginia, if you're in Stockholm, Sweden, or you're in Moscow, Russia, Tokyo, Japan. Those are all basic human intrinsic values. When you think about being one message away, what's the one message that resonates with you from women that you talk to in sales? Or what's the one message that keeps repeating itself as people reach out to you in these conversations?
I don't know if there's one message. There's maybe a theme of what women are looking for that are reaching out to me, and it's support, it's help. I am new to sales. I just started a new SDR role. I'm not sure what to do, what I should be thinking about. And what's happening is that these women, these really brave women, are reaching out in order to prepare themselves for what's ahead. So they're looking at someone or for someone that could be me, that could be somebody else in my network. I don't decide what it is that I can give them, but I simply just ask, what is it that you need help with? Maybe, just maybe I can help you. I'm not an expert. I'm not the absolutely best person out there. There are millions of incredible women. I might be one of them who could help you if what you're looking for and what you truly are seeking is something that I have experienced in the past myself. That's how I can be the most helpful. And if I haven't, I can still be your friend. I can still cheer you on. I can still support you. But there might be somebody else in my network who's doing exactly what you're doing. So as an example, if a woman comes to me and she says, hey, I am a salesperson. I do enterprise sales for this type of industry, this type of persona, and this is what I do. That's great. That is not what I do. So I'm not sure how tactfully I can help you achieving that goal. However, I know a bunch of other women, amazing women, yeah, who are so successful, who have done that. So let me introduce you to that person so they can help you with that specific thing. And then it's the second question of what else is going on for you? Is there anything else I could potentially help you with, either myself or guiding you into somebody else?
I love that because it is introduction. There is something beautiful about introduction and connecting people together. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I've done that for years where I've just said, hey, I know this person. Let me introduce you to this person. Or someone has thought enough of me to say, Brian, let me introduce you to this person.
Yeah.
Why do you think some people have a difficult time introducing other people to each other and making those connections?
Because they probably are not sure what it is or who it is that they're dealing with and what they truly are after. I think I look at it like a puzzle, like there's pieces coming together and you can either be the foundation of that and help match up the pieces or you cannot. And I look at myself like I am just the connector because I can quickly realize that when I speak with you, Brian, and then you mention something that you're working on and that's important to you. And then I remember like, oh yeah, 6 months ago, I spoke to this person or last week I spoke to someone that's really good at what you just talked about. I quickly just in my own mind, make the connection. And then I have to like follow up with myself and take notes of that and make that introduction happen, right? Like the other week, somebody reached out to me, this guy, who said, I'm starting a new internship as an SDR. That's what I'm going to do this summer. I'm going to start a new internship. I come from an Army background, would love to talk with you. And I was like, that's amazing. Let's definitely talk about being new to sales and being a new SDR. That's great. I would also like to introduce you to my friend who works at this big company who has the same background as you. I think you two would really connect and understand each other at that level. So let me do that as well. And that's how I think about it. So I have this new person, I have this other person in my network that just came into my circle. So now I'm putting those two people together who do not already know each other. And that's just how I think about it.
Well, and again, Gallum, I love what you said there because here's the thing is that people want to know that there's someone that's walked that road before them. Mm-hmm. And I think where you're connecting with women in sales is that they're a lot of them are coming to those roles for the first time. It's new. It's exciting. It is, oh my goodness. And it can be intimidating as well. And now what you're doing is you're reaching out and saying, but there's a community of people that have done what you've done, been where you've been, and let's come together and let's share ideas. Let's connect you with this person with you. I've had that happen with the podcast. I've had people reach out and go, you need to talk to this person. Mm-hmm. And I had someone reach out, a dear friend of ours, Dale Dupree, who wrote the forward to People Buy From People. Dale reached out to me and said, you have to have her on your podcast. You have to do it. And so again, that's how that that connection happened for us is that, you know, when someone takes the time to introduce you, it's because they know that there's value between the two of you. So let me ask you this. What do you think makes people reticent to make those introductions?
I'm not sure because I can't relate to it.
Wow. Yeah. That's a surprising answer. I didn't mean to throw you a curveball, but that's really enlightening that you just said, I'm not used to that. Yeah. I love that. I love that answer. I did not mean to throw you a curveball there, but I think there are people that go, well, I don't know if I can do that, or that's outside of my comfort zone, or things like that. And you just said, well, I've never had that feeling happen to me before.
I haven't.
That's brilliant. Like that should be the way it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just maybe a natural instinct for me, and it comes from a place of, I want to be the person that I wish that I had at certain points in my life. So for me, it's not something I think about being a challenge. It's just, especially not because one of my missions, I would say, like, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this too, part of what I do outside of work and with my podcast. But when I think about my why or what I want my legacy to be or anything in that nature, I think about just wanting to be as useful and helpful as possible. So part of that just naturally comes into the place of, well, if I am the common denominator here, then it is my job to make that happen. So I don't really think twice about it. It's not like a question.
Absolutely. I didn't want to get the tearing of paper into the podcast there. I had to mute for just a moment because no one wants to hear tearing paper. I tore the piece of paper off that I was making notes with. If you're watching on YouTube, I tore the piece of paper I was making notes on. And I didn't want to hear this big, you know, the screeching of paper. That's where the silence came in. Let's talk about your podcast for just a second. Yeah. Your podcast is intentional about legacy. Where did that idea come from for you?
Yeah, so it came from a place of grief is really where it came from at the core of it. It was me when... So I've lost my dad at a young age when I was about 8 or 9 years old. My dad passed away. And then about 6 years ago, my foster mom passed away. So there was this sense of like dealing with the grief of losing a loved one, right? Like anyone who's lost a loved one understands that feeling. And so the idea of the podcast came from multiple sources. It wasn't just like I woke up one day and all of a sudden I came up with this idea. It was like seeds had been planted years before I released it. End of 2020, I released it on my birthday in 2020. But the seeds had been planted way before that, years before that, because it really got planted when I was dealing with the first grief of losing my dad. And then there were the second one of losing my foster mom. And then there were other, not just the death of loved ones, but also the loss of relationships. That's another set of grief that people go through, is when you have someone close in your life and all of a sudden that person is no longer close to you, then you lost someone, but they're still alive. And that whole thing is also very confusing to me to deal with. So the idea came from the feeling of going through grief and also haven't really dealt with it appropriately. And so that's where that came from. And then the question was, I wonder if other people are feeling this way. And what if I just created a space where you can talk to people while you still have the opportunity to get to know them and connect with them and understand why they're doing the things that they're doing? Because that was the number one question I had for my foster mom, was that I had an idea. I know what kind of person she was. And she was super loved, and she was the most selfless person I've ever met and probably will ever meet. And so the question I had was like, what made her do the things and the choices that she made? What made her give up so much of her own life to take care of other kids in her neighborhood and be that leader in the community who really was like a mom to everyone? What made her want to do that truly from her heart? So it started with that question. And then I was like, I need to figure out other people's reasons and what their, you know, intended legacy is.
Did you, have you had a moment, because I've had it doing this podcast, have you had a moment where you were just blown back by what someone said to you? Like that's really powerful. For you, what's been the unintended benefit of doing your podcast?
I mean, it's been just the shift of perspective, the shift of understanding more people, seeing like common themes. I tend to be just kind of categorizing or compartmentalizing things. So I hear the answers from people on my podcast, and that makes me even more curious. Like, okay, well, that sounded like a similar answer to someone else, but you live very different lives. So I wonder why that is. And it's just, it goes on and on and on. So it's an opportunity first and foremost to, for me to reflect on life and to get a broader perspective of other people. And it comes back to where we started this conversation about curiosity. I've always been curious about other people around me and what makes them the way they are and what led them to the place that they are, just like you are in your podcast, right? And in this conversation with me. So that's like a huge part of it, is just that curiosity and the interest and being able to connect with more people and building stronger relationships.
I just like hearing my voice in a microphone. That's what it is. No, I'm totally kidding. It sounds much better in a microphone than it does in real life, honestly. Let's step aside and take another break. When we come back, I want to dive back a little bit to what you were talking about a minute ago about losing your dad at an early age. And we'll get to Gallum's life story all the way back. You're going to want to stay tuned because it's going to be good. Brian Sexton here on the Intentional Encourager podcast with my special guest, Gallum Gourmet, here on the Intentional Encourager podcast. Hey, everybody, Brian Sexton. Want to tell you about my new book, People Buy from People, 10 Powerful People Lessons from the Ultimate People Person, my dad. My dad was one of the greatest connectors that I ever knew, and he shared with me 10 connecting principles that I have used throughout my 25-year sales and sales management, customer engagement, and leadership career that I'm passing along to you. If you want to be a stronger, deeper, and more powerful connector, you've got to pick up a copy of People Buy from People. There are concepts in there that you may not realize help make you a power connector. You can go to Amazon and pick it up, Kindle if you're an e-reader and you like to do it that way, or now available on Audible. And there's one other way you can get a copy of People Buy from People. You can get one from me and I'll sign it for you. You go to intentionalmediaandpublishing@gmail.com and send me an email, and I'll share with you the link on how you can get a signed copy. You can buy a signed copy directly from me. Again, People Buy from People. If you want to connect like never before, pick up your copy today of People Buy from People. And now let's get back to more great conversation here on the Intentional Encourager podcast. All right, you mentioned before we took a break, you mentioned losing your dad at about 8 or 9 years old. Take me back to that time. Take me back as far as you want to go from point A to point B in your journey and just kind of tell your story. How as far back to where we are today?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, born and raised in Sweden, and I live with my biological family up until I was about 8 years old or so. And then I moved into my first foster family And I lived with that foster family until I was 18. I'm going to go back and forth here, but I'm giving kind of the timeline at a very high level. So by the time I was 18, I was like, I'm done. I no longer want to live in this foster family. I'm out. I'm going to go out on my own. I'm going to get my own place. And so that's what I did. I was just turning 18. But so that's kind of the timeline. And then like between 18 to 20, turning 21, I lived on my own. And then I moved to the States after that, by the time I turned 21. So that's kind of the timeline, right? And then I've shared the in between that up until today. So to go back now in this story of my life is that my parents at the time were not living together. They were married, but they were not living together at the time. So I was super close to my dad my entire life. I was the firstborn daughter of his. I have four siblings. I'm right in the middle. So I have two younger sisters, two older brothers, but I'm the middle child. So I was the firstborn daughter, right, of my family. And so me and my dad were super close. I was with him at any time where he was home. If he was at work, obviously I wasn't there, but even sometimes I would actually be with him at work, sitting in the office, and he was a mechanic. So I would sit in the office, hang out with his coworkers, and there's that. I tried to be around him as much as I could. And so I was so close with him, right? And there was, on the weekends, I would be spending that with him. Every weekend I would spend time at his place. So that's kind of how I grew up, right? Like super close to my dad, not so close to my mom. And so then I lost him. He was actually in jail at the time. And there's a whole backstory to that, but he was in jail. He came out of jail and I was supposed to meet him. At this point, I'm living in my first foster family, right? I'm 8 or 9 years old. And I always had to have visits from social workers. And one point they're like, okay, so we're going to schedule a time for you to meet your dad again. Like you haven't seen him now in months. So we're going to schedule a time for you to see him. And I was super excited about that. And then what ended up happening was we needed to reschedule the visit. And I never actually got to see him again. So because we rescheduled that visit into a couple of weeks later, he ended up passing away and I never got to see him again. So the last memory I have of my dad is, I guess, one of the most dramatic memories there is, but it was also like a moment of that I'm never going to forget. My last memory with him before he was actually taken away, the police came, and that was that. So that's my last memory of him that I have. It was one of those weekends I was with him. And yeah, that's kind of the story around my dad and that relationship that I had with him.
Do you mind me asking, why do you think looking back that you weren't as close with your mom? Because, you know, I saw, Galen, when you were talking about your dad, there, I mean, it's palpable. Those of you watching on YouTube, it's palpable, the feeling that she has for her dad. And you know, please, I mean, no disrespect by this, but you're very matter of fact when you talk about your mom. Why do you think it is that you and your mom were never able to form that kind of mother-daughter bond?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And I thought about that quite a while. I think just naturally what happened, there are dynamics, you know, within families of who you gravitate the most towards. And first of all, this is what people don't expect me to say, but I grew up being very much a tomboy. I was, and my mom tried to force me to be this like pretty cute little girl. And that just wasn't me or my personality. Like I hated having to wear dresses. I hated having to wear certain shoes. And I hated when she needed to, you know, braid my hair, like so much that this is another kind of fun story actually, that just demonstrates me growing up and the differences here between my parents and me. So my mom, I mean, she is lovely and she did her best. She did what she could under the circumstances. So there's that. And I will always give her credit for that. But she wasn't as close to me, and I still don't have that close of a relationship with her. And there's a lot of history to why that is. But growing up, she used to, you know, braid my hair, and I hated that. It hurt. I was always crying. I was miserable having to sit through that experience. And for those of you who are listening or watching who have African parents, will understand, African mom will understand the pain. So there's that. But I remember one time as she was braiding my hair, and I was crying, I was miserable, and my dad would watch me just being in pain, and he hated seeing me in pain as well. And so one day when my mom wasn't in the house anymore, he actually cut my hair off for me. Yeah. And so that happened, and I don't remember it, but the feeling I can imagine that I must have had, right, is just liberation. And what I do remember from that, and reason why I know that happened, is because probably a few weeks later, we had to take photos at school. And I remember, and I have a picture of it too somewhere, I had this like short afro, you know, and I was comfortable with it because I no longer needed to braid my hair.
What do you think you today, if you could go back and put your arm around that little 8 or 9 year old girl, what would you say to her?
It would be encouraging. It would be something like, you're going to be okay. Just comfort, you know, because I think because of the circumstances in which I grew up, the challenges and things that I have had to figure out and learn from, and the heartbreaks and all these different things has led me to a place of really needing safety and security in my life, and constantly looking for that thing, right? Or that place of feeling safe and secure and feeling comfortable and content. And so if I could go back to my younger self and put my arms around myself, that's what I would say. Like, you're going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. You will do great, and you're going to be safe.
That is so powerful, because again, you're dealing with the loss of your dad, not a good relationship with your mom. You go to a foster home. I want to go a little bit further here. Mm-hmm. You're 18 years old. You move out. Then you decide to move to the United States and be an au pair. I've kind of held this in the back of my mind, Galen, because I want to really get into it. What prompted you to want to become an au pair and move to the United States?
It's simple. I just wanted some excitement.
And au pair was the,
It wasn't, I'm going to get excitement by becoming an au pair. That wasn't the answer to it. That was just the solution to what I wanted to accomplish. I wanted to get outside of everything I knew. And I just had this idea that there's got to be something different out there. There's got to be people that I need to meet or should meet, and I'm excited to meet them and just get outside of my zone. Like, I just grew up in this really small, boring town. Like, it just was not for me. I just knew that. So I said, I got to go somewhere else. The question is where, how, and when, and ended up being the U.S. And I ended up just becoming an au pair. That was the most affordable, the easiest way to get into the country. And it was something I could do. Like, I've been taking care of my family my entire life. This is the part people don't really know about me, is that I was at a very young age, like I'm saying, I was 6, 7 years old. I was the one taking care of my little sisters. I was the one feeding them. I was the one changing their diapers. I was the one taking them out to have fun and play and do those things. So it wasn't foreign to me to be like, okay, I'm going to move to this country and take care of somebody else's kids. Like, no, that's not that foreign to me. I just needed to do something different. And that's how it started, was that opportunity to go to the States. Didn't cost me a lot of money, get to work, make a little bit of money, but more so get the experience that I wanted.
Take me to when you first got to the United States. What was the one thing about the United States? And I'm sure you heard a lot about the United States, but what was the first thing that you had a moment like, oh my goodness, this is not what I pictured the United States to be?
I can't remember. Honestly, I cannot remember anything other than the superficial things that we think about, like, oh, is this how people sound like? Is this what people look like? Okay. I mean, depends on where in the country you are. But you know what I quickly realized, though, the other side of this, is that I quickly realized from that experience that people are the same everywhere. You can't run away from society. You can't run away from the way people are going to behave. So if this is the question I would go back and asking my younger self, and I would encourage other people to ask themselves, is why are you making the decisions that you're making? What's the core reason for it? Like for me, if I go back to think about it, I was running away from something, right? I was looking for better days ahead. I was looking for a different outcome, but it was hard for me to even reach a different outcome until I had truly gone back into myself and figured out what is it that I'm dealing with right now within myself. That needs to be figured out first, because you can't run away from yourself. You can physically go to some other place, but going back to the emotional part, you can't just run away from the emotions that you have experienced or the trauma that you're carrying with you and think that that's going to be solved when you go into a new place, because it's not going to.
What is the difference, or what, not the difference, forgive me for that, but yeah, what did you find the correlation? I know there's got to be a correlation. There's a correlation between a lot of things. What was the correlation you found between being an au pair and going into sales?
There's so many. But top of my head right now, I would say just the ability to listen. Because my situation was that I was taking care of really young kids. You know, they were 4.5-month-old baby and a 2.5-year-old. So I really needed to be in tune with the baby's reactions and feelings and responses to things, and being able to give that back in a nurturing way. And also the 2.5-year-old, super vocal, super communicative. So I would need to speak with her. And for me, like I said earlier, the challenge for me, especially in the first couple of weeks, was just this dreading feeling of like, oh my goodness, I have to speak English today again. Like, is this going to be my life? And it is. And when you're dealing with a child who's super verbal and communicative, you have no other choice. So for me, like the correlation then between being an au pair and working in sales is just the ability to listen, pay attention, and respond in an appropriate manner and in a way that you're being heard. Right. And acknowledging, I learned a lot about acknowledging the kids, what they're saying, what they're feeling, what they're experiencing, and being able to respond well to that and communicate with them in ways that they want to be communicated, but also listening to what the parents want. Like, I'm not their mom, right? I was their au pair. I was there to help the family. So I really need to pay attention. This is almost like sales training, right? You think about your manager is going to tell you, this is the way you're doing certain things. This is how we want the sales culture to look like, or the sales team to operate. There's an operational manual of some sort. It's the same thing when you're an au pair. You're leading by the family's rules, not your own rules.
No, I love that. That is so good. I want to ask you, you've taken us through a pretty big obstacle in your life of losing your dad and losing your foster mom. Mm-hmm. Is there another obstacle that comes to mind that was really difficult that you had to overcome? And what was the lesson that you learned from it?
Ryan, there's so many. We would sit here for hours if we're going to cover each one of them.
Maybe we need to do a series of podcasts, Gail, and make sure we cover all of these different challenges.
There's so many. There are challenges and opportunities, because there's always two sides to the coin, right? You can look at it and say, well, that was a very unfortunate situation and a big challenge. But also on the other side of it is the opportunity for change, the opportunity for growth. So for me, a few things is, one was a divorce. I was going through a divorce a couple of years ago. I got married really young. So that's definitely one of the biggest challenges to overcome, right? Of the heartbreak of that, the challenges of it, and the way that ended. The second one I would say is my sobriety. I got sober 3 years ago. That was another huge challenge. So those two comes to mind for me as being major obstacles, challenges, but also opportunities.
Wow. Wow. That is so cool. We really do need to do another podcast at some point about that, because again, I think people deal with things differently. Mm-hmm. And for some people, you know, getting sober and staying sober is something they had to do. When I heard you talk just a minute ago, it was like, that's something that needed to happen in my life. Mm-hmm. Like there was no, like you were just very resolute about it. Like that had to happen.
Yeah.
What was the hardest thing about getting sober and staying sober?
The hardest thing for me, I mean, obviously in the beginning, I think a lot of people who've gone through this experience or similar one with any type of addiction to something is, in the beginning, you have to kick the habit that you're just so used to. And then when I got past that point, it was staying in tune with myself and what I need to do. Because it's so easy to get wrapped up with other people's thoughts and opinions and suggestions of what you should do, how you should do it. And like one of those, as an example, was this thing that I don't like, which actually translates pretty well into what's happening on LinkedIn as well, is this thing of in sobriety, right? Where people would say, you have to go to X amount of meetings and X amount of days in order to stay sober and keep your sobriety. And I immediately unsubscribed to that whole thing. I was like, nope, I don't agree with it. I don't like it. And who's telling me I need to do what? I just don't thrive in that type of environment when people are telling me what I need to do, how I need to live my life. And if I don't do it, there's going to be a consequence to that. It's like, no, thank you. I'm all set. Unsubscribe. And same thing is happening on LinkedIn. I've heard in certain places that they're like, oh, do this challenge, post something every day for the next 60 days or 90 days or whatever.
Yes.
And immediately I was like, nope, unsubscribe, not interested. Because to me, it comes back to this concept in both sales and life and everything in between of quality over quantity. So when somebody is telling me that I'm not going to be able to keep my sobriety and live this lifestyle that I've chosen unless I go to 90 meetings in 90 days, I call BS. I don't think that's true for me.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody else needs that, but I don't.
I just wrote down something that you said, the power of unsubscribing, because people will subscribe to theories.
Yes.
They'll subscribe to postulates and they'll say, well, I have to subscribe to this to have it apply correctly to my life. And what you just said, Gillum, is so good, because what you're saying is you have to subscribe to what you feel keeps you in tune with yourself and what keeps you in tune with you and how you're living your life. I love what you said there. I want to follow it up with the last question I have for you. Mm-hmm. And that is this: would you share your biggest piece of intentional encouragement?
Yes. My biggest piece of intentional encouragement is to embrace yourself. Be who you are meant to be brave, and just embrace who you are, embrace who you were. Embrace who you are right now. Embrace who you want to be in the future. Just be you. Don't try to copy somebody else's way of living or somebody else's way of thinking or somebody else's way of acting. Just find yourself. And there's, I think there's so much underneath that of the question, how do I do that? Something I've had to revisit recently are my values. It's going through an entire exercise I did for myself of what are my true core values? What does that mean for me? When do they show up in my life? And why do they matter now? I think knowing and understanding your core values and aligning yourself with people who are sharing the same or very similar values is going to help you a lot to be able to stay true to yourself and being able to stay encouraged and stay intentional with who you are, accepting who you are, and embrace who you want to become.
So good. So good. I just, so good. My goodness. This was so good. Please share with folks how they can connect with you on your social media platforms. I know people are going to want to connect with you. Tell them how they can do that.
I hope so. And I do hope they take the second step to this, because here's a disclaimer. I am so overwhelmed with LinkedIn inbox. It's wild. I'm so overwhelmed with any inbox. My email is a hot mess as well. So here's the biggest piece is definitely connect with me on LinkedIn. And then find something. Like, I tend to respond the quickest to people who, number one, are top of my inbox, and number two, weren't pitching me. So if you're pitching me on something, I'm probably not going to be spending too much time responding to it. And it's not because I'm a rude person. I'm definitely not. I'm a nice person, but it's just not where I want to spend my time and energy on, because I get too much of it. So if you want to connect afterwards, let me know, like, what was one thing from this conversation that you really enjoyed that helped change or shift your perspective? Because for me, being intentional is being able to help somebody shift their perspective on something that I've shared. So if I could do that for you in this conversation, let me know what that piece is as a feedback. And if you have something you think I should improve on, let me know that too. So LinkedIn is the place.
This has been so good. This has been well worth the wait. You and I have been trying, again, as I said off the top, we've been trying to do this for a good while. Worth the wait. Gatlin Girmay, thank you so much for joining me today on the Intentional Encourager podcast.
Thank you, Brian. It's been a pleasure being here with you.
My thanks as always to producer Bryce Sexton and technical advisor Matt Means. And of course, the ultimate thanks goes to the Lord Jesus Christ, who provides intentional encouragement every day through his word. If you're not subscribed to the Intentional Encourager podcast, hit the subscribe button wherever you get podcasts so you don't miss an exciting episode where you can get encouraged and stay encouraged. And remember, anyone, anywhere, at any time, any place can be an intentional encourager.